Have you ever noticed how the busiest people often seem the most exhausted spiritually? Research shows Americans have gained 6 hours of weekly leisure time since 1965, yet we feel more drained than ever. Those hours vanished into screens that now interrupt us 64 times daily with buzzing notifications. We check our phones 96 times each day, roughly every 10 waking minutes. The Chinese language captures this perfectly. The character for busy literally means death of the heart, while mindfulness combines symbols for now and heart, experiencing this moment with your heart fully alive. We've become experts at filling time while losing the ability to truly inhabit it. Many who drift from faith don't cite doctrinal disagreements, but something more visceral. Practices once rich with meaning now feel mechanical, joyless, like going through motions. When we approach spirituality with our microwave mentality, expecting instant peace, immediate enlightenment, we miss what authentic growth actually requires: exploration, uncertainty, productive struggle. The very stillness that could restore us feels impossible to access. We describe devoted believers as active and summarize faith through actions: pray, serve, attend. This doing-focused approach flattens worship into productivity metrics. One exhausted young mother, serving as primary president while volunteering for everything, contracted mononucleosis. Her response? Thinking she wasn't praying enough or serving enough. Her husband finally intervened. "This is not what God expects of you." When overscheduled, we become like those in Scripture who reject new truth because they already have enough. Picture an overfull teacup. No matter how excellent the tea being poured, it simply runs over the sides, wasted. Just as Christ emptied himself to do the Father's work, we must empty ourselves, our calendars, expectations, mental clutter, to receive divine guidance. The restored gospel offers numerous opportunities to stop doing and start being: Sabbath rest, personal prayer, scripture study, sacrament, temple attendance. Yet we approach these as just one more thing rather than intentional sanctuary. Religious practices aren't obligations competing for our time. They're excuses to stop meaningless activity and sit with loved ones at the feet of the Lord. Following God sometimes means doing less. Christ retreated to wilderness solitude. President McKay found profound insights sitting before a fire in his hometown. The Sabbath offers a weekly mindfulness retreat, though many end Sunday exhausted rather than renewed. Adam Miller describes it as God's way of interrupting our lives, a beat of stillness, a little pocket of eternity. This requires preparation, stepping away from email and social media, waking earlier for communion with God. Our homes should become primary sanctuaries, spaces deliberately designed for spiritual connection, through quiet corners for meditation or device-free areas. Temples offer another sanctuary where silence creates space for relational meditation with God, establishing contemplation patterns that extend into daily life. Even longtime believers experience periods when prayer feels mundane or empty. Rather than abandoning it, we can transform our approach by creating silence within our conversations with God. Joseph Smith taught we may converse with God as one man converses with another, suggesting prayer should feel natural and deeply personal. When asked what she says to God in prayer, Mother Teresa answered simply, "I listen." When asked what God says to her, she replied, "He listens." This exchange reveals prayer's often overlooked receptive dimension. When we approach prayer primarily as "please help my wife to soften his heart," we risk treating God like a genie. 5-year-old William insightfully asked, "Why do we keep telling Jesus what to do? Are we Jesus's king?" Our prayers change substantially when we focus on being tools for his purposes rather than treating him as a tool for ours. Bishop Tutu offered a beautiful metaphor. Prayer is like sitting before a winter fire, just there with God, letting his warmth envelop you. The greatest answers come not as solutions to our requests, but in gradual transformation of our hearts through divine communion. When we seek stillness, inner noise often intensifies. Even when the outer world has been wrestled into silence, we still go right on talking, worrying, arguing with ourselves, daydreaming. This resistance is integral to cultivating stillness. The point isn't purging discomfort, but observing inner activity with acceptance. After teaching the Nephites, Jesus perceived that ye are weak, that ye cannot understand all my words, and encouraged them to prepare your minds for the morrow. Meditation works through cycles of focus, distraction, and refocus, training the mind to recognize wandering and return to calm. An anchor helps ground the wandering mind, a still, quiet place for attention to return. The breath is most common, referencing the life God is lending us. When discomfort arises, Jon Kabat-Zinn invites students to cradle the discomfort with tenderness. One bishop emphasized committing enough time to prayer to work through resistance. That's the great thing about designating that time with conviction. You already clear enough time to wrestle with yourself before God. Mindfulness teaches that thoughts aren't automatic reality. Rather than identifying with mental content, imagine thoughts as a river passing by while you sit on the bank. This distance allows evaluation. Is this thought true, good, of God? One man with depression had interpreted harsh self-criticism as divine disappointment, but recognized through mindful practice, these weren't inspiration. Scripture reading becomes as distracted as prayer when approached mindlessly. Sacred reading goes beyond comprehension to interpretation. What does this mean for me right now? Scripture becomes an encounter with both God's words and His Spirit. Lack of knowing isn't an aberration, but an essential feature of mortality. This uncertainty preserves our agency. We're provided with sufficient materials out of which to fashion a life of credible conviction or dismissive denial. Growth happens in this ambiguity. When faced with silence from God, we can stay present rather than leave, discovering that God's silence is not itself a rebuke, but an invitation to share silence with Him. A couple asked their spiritual leader, "Is this it? Is this all we can expect?" Despite following expected practices, they struggled to find peace. While many blame individual or institutional failings for faith departures, broader cultural forces affect everyone. The consuming, distracting, accelerating culture we inhabit. Just as chronic stress damages healthy bodies, spiritual lives become depleted when we can't genuinely stop, rest, and commune with God. Rather than seeing depletion as disappointing, recognize it as revealing. If physical health challenges stem from lifestyle patterns, we can change those patterns. The same applies to spiritual life. Reviving faith may be as simple as recalibrating our daily pace to rediscover unhurried existence. After cheerfully doing all things that lie in our power, we're invited to the perhaps harder task, to stand still and be still and know that I am God. You don't need more activities or spiritual to-do lists. You need permission to stop, to breathe, to let your heart synchronize with the divine rhythm beneath the noise. Your faith isn't dying from lack of effort. It's suffocating from lack of stillness. The most revolutionary act, be still and remember who you are.